The Chronicles of Endicott, Part 2. Thursday, January 11th, 2007. I'm semi-awake, but unsure of the time. It's dark, so I'm pretty sure it's still quite early. After a while, I hear my bedroom door open and someone enters. I assume correctly it's my mom, hanging some pants up in the closet. "You have 15 more minutes," she says, helpfully, before leaving and shutting the door. I realize now it's 6:30 in the morning, since I had asked that she make sure that I was up by 6:45 before she and my youngest brother left for school that day. After finally waking up and getting myself ready, I load the car and have to scrape the ice and frost off my windshield. Otherwise, I cannot safely drive down the road, let alone to the train station in Lancaster. The car was on and the heat was going, but this didn't seem to thaw it out quick enough. Also, I was out of windshield wiper fluid, so using that to eradicate the wintry foe was also out of the question. After a vigorous and frustrating several minutes of scraping, I was able to see well enough in order to make a quick stop at Wise. I parked my car in a spot that was receiving light from the now-rising sun as I stopped in to get my paycheck and some snacks for the train. Snacks, in this case, took the form of roughly 2.5 pounds of Dr. Pepper-flavored Jelly Belly brand jelly beans. It's a lot of candy. And believe it or not, they lasted the entire trip. I finished the last of them on the train ride home. I'd never driven to the train station in Lancaster before, but I knew which exit to get off at, and that by following the signs, I'd find the station without a problem. The first leg of the trip had me switching trains at Penn Station in New York City. The ride went smoothly, and we arrived at Penn Station a little after 12 o'clock. The train bound for Syracuse didn't leave for another hour or so. Thankfully, this gave me some time to find lunch and also a Duane Reade drugstore in the station. I had a massive headache and desperately needed something for it. After finding some lunch, I saw that Linz had called me. I called her back to let her know I had arrived at Penn Station and roughly 6 hours remained before I'd be in Syracuse. She was already en route to Syracuse herself, intending to do some shopping in the interim. After we finished talking, I saw that my mom had called as well, and so I gave her a quick call to let her know how my trip was going so far. Not long after that, the boarding call came for my train, and the second leg of the trip began. As the train began its journey, I sat reading The Dead Zone, one of the many Stephen King books I brought with me. I found myself somewhat distracting at times, overhearing a conversation between a New York stockbroker and a Russian doctor. I was not eavesdropping. Far from it. I didn't need to. These gentlemen were across the aisle in several seats ahead of me, and I could still clearly hear them as if I were standing right next to them. This goes to show you that you encounter all sorts of interesting people when you travel. Time passed, and the sun started to set. I felt the inclination to doze for a bit, and, being a simple man with simple needs, ultimately decided to go with my instinct. The train stopped in Schenectady at one point, which my mind identified as the home of the 12345 zip code. These are the kind of things that you learn when you work in a post office. In fact, it was at this time that I came to the realization that working in a post office had forever damaged me. C'est la vie, I thought, unaware that this would not be the last French phrase I'd encounter on this trip. The train made a stop in Utica, and, to my great surprise, I saw snow on the ground. Here it was, mid-January, and this was the first significant snowfall I'd seen this winter. And, to be perfectly honest, I was okay with that. But upon seeing this, I felt a little like Jack Skellington from The Nightmare Before Christmas, when he first encounters it's Christmas Town and sees the snow everywhere. Of course, this was only the tip of the proverbial iceberg, so to speak. Eventually, I hear the conductor announce, "Next station stop is Syracuse. Syracuse in a few minutes. Syracuse is next." In case you've never ridden a train before, let me assure you that I'm not exaggerating. They really do announce and emphasize the next station stop at least 3 times over the train's PA system. It's a good idea if you ask me. Repetition breeds remembrance, or something of that ilk. The train pulls into the station, and I disembark. As I stand on the platform, 2 thoughts occur to me. First, I can't believe the huge mounds of snow I can see in the nearby parking lot. And second, it's really damn cold outside, but boy, am I glad to be off that train. I quickly join the throng of people heading into the station. As I carted my luggage into the main concourse area, I caught sight of her from a distance. There was Linz, and she had not come alone. Her friend and classmate Elsa was with her. As is always the case, I was thrilled to see Linz. I gave her a big hug, and then she officially welcomed me to upstate New York. I was then introduced to Elsa, whom Linz had dubbed the worst Bulgarian ever. Please don't ask for an explanation. I don't think anything I could say would make an entertaining enough backstory. Honestly, I didn't really get much of a backstory either. But I'd say it's best to just smile, nod, and accept the title. Have you all come to terms with this? Yes? Good. On we go. As we left the train station, Linz mentioned that she and Elsa had been at the mall near the train station shopping while I was on the way up. They were trying to find cocktail dresses to wear to a party they'd be attending the next night. Thus far, they'd done a lot of looking, but no buying, since nothing had caught their eye definitively. So we headed for the mall in order for Linz and Elsa to resume their search, with me in tow. But before we did that, an important pre-dress shopping ritual had to be observed. Frolicking in a massive snowpile followed by a brief snowball fight. No, I'm not kidding. I saw the whole thing myself, and even have photographic proof. Hell, I took the pictures myself. Thankfully, the snow quickly melted off the two of them before we set foot in the mall. I've never been on a dress shopping trip before. In fact, I've never really accompanied a girl on any sort of shopping trip before, for that matter. Well, no time like the present to start, I guess, right? Keep in mind that clothing is not my area of expertise. My fashion sense, if you can call it that, consists mostly of jeans and t-shirts that celebrate all sorts of aspects of pop culture. The evening consisted of traveling from store to store, Linz and Elsa trying on dresses and soliciting my opinion of them, and me alternately taking off and putting back on my jackets and flannel shirts, since my inner thermostat seemed to fluctuate without rhyme or reason every couple of minutes. This worried me at first. Great, I thought, my first night here and I'm getting sick. This'll be a thrilling weekend if I'm bedridden. Thankfully, this was obviously not the case. It would make for very boring reading if it was. Saturday. Still sick as a dog. I've turned the apartment into a plague village, feeling really bad about it. Signed, Patient Zero. Sorry, I'm prone to tangents sometimes. I have a feeling this will not be the last one, so stick with me. My mind can be an interesting travel destination in and of itself. The searching continued well into the night as it got closer to the mall's closing time. All the while, I was absolutely floored by the size of the mall. 3 floors at the very least, considering we didn't even traverse the entire mall. I was impressed. I truly believe I could get lost and spend a good portion of the day just browsing. We then left the mall and decided to find somewhere to have dinner in downtown Syracuse. This proved to be somewhat difficult as it was after 10 o'clock by this time and many establishments appeared to be closed. So we decided to go with Plan B. Return to Linz's apartment and order pizza once we got there. On the drive back, Linz regaled me with some interesting facts about driving in upstate New York. In Pennsylvania, it's virtually illegal to perform a U-turn anywhere. In New York, you can U-turn to your heart's content, provided you have the room to do so. Also, street names have the ability to magically change. Although you're on the same strip of road, you may not be calling it the same thing you were just a few minutes ago. Turn left on to Junction Avenue, and after 3 minutes, well, I haven't gone anywhere else, but now it says that this is Tremont Street. On this drive, I got to experience upstate New York after dark. As sexy and titillating as that may initially sound, don't hold your breath expecting to read about anything hot. There wasn't much to see except darkness, with the occasional silhouettes of trees, mountains, and reflections of the sky in bodies of water. I'm sure it must look very nice during the day, I said. Linz responded very simply, nope. As we drove, Linz casually observed the good travel time we were making. At one point, she informed Els and I that we had reached the halfway point of the trip in a little less than half the time it would regularly take. Linz can be a fast driver. I've ridden with her a great many times and can attest to this fact. But she's also a very safe driver. Never once had I felt ill at ease with her behind the wheel. Besides, I didn't mind the fast traveling time. The sooner we got to Linz's apartment, the sooner we could eat, and the sooner I could sit down somewhere and not watch the world pass me through a window. It'd feel good to not be traveling for a while. We finally arrived at the apartment, and Linz gave me the grand tour. I had thought her apartment would have been larger, basing this assumption on the pictures I'd seen of her apartment. It could be described as small, but homey. The decor was very nice, lots of deep, dark reds, and some of the comfiest furniture I've had the pleasure to lounge on. After the pizza had been ordered, we decided to try and find a way to keep ourselves entertained as we waited for food to arrive. By this time, it was almost midnight, so of course there was only one logical thing to do. Hardcore Scrabble! You may ask yourself, how is Hardcore Scrabble different from regular Scrabble? Simply put, it all depends on who you're playing with. I heard Linz tell me about how competitive the game's got in the past. Add the fact that she was currently undefeated in Scrabble, and this was going to all lead to one thing. I was going to be destroyed. I mean, me trying to compete with two PhD students, this was not going to end well for me. Two games and several hours later, Linz had trounced Elsa and I rather soundly. We realized it was now 3 o'clock in the morning, yet none of us were showing the slightest signs of fatigue. Linz says this was nothing new to her and Elsa. When you have the kind of schedules and workloads we deal with, not sleeping becomes second nature at times. Personally, I was impressed that I was still awake and coherent, considering I'd woken up at 6:45 the previous morning. The napping on the train helped, I'm sure. Linz had said earlier that she wanted to cook at least once before the weekend was over, so she could prove to me that she was a good cook. I already knew Linz could cook. She'd told me about her culinary triumphs before. But if one insists on cooking, you don't need to twist my arm. I'll gladly partake. So Linz and Elsa searched for potential recipes in the PDQ Vegetarian Cookbook. I hadn't mentioned this important piece of information yet, did I? Linz is a vegetarian. Elsa is a vegan. I, however, consider myself an omnivore. This ends up being a huge point of conflict and contention that permeates throughout the rest of the weekend. And that last sentence could have been farther from the truth. Anyone who knows me can tell you that I keep an open mind and I'm always willing to try new things. It's the point of life if you don't have a little variety every now and then. As they searched, Linz and Elsa asked me if there was any foods I was allergic to or just flat out wouldn't eat. We don't want to kill you, Elsa added helpfully. My response of nuts and cheeses was accepted easily enough. Linz is allergic to nuts since they can cause her to die, and Elsa doesn't eat cheese since she's a vegan. The recipes were finalized, and Linz added shopping for the ingredients to the agenda for the next day. One person was skeptical, however. So we're going to go shopping for these ingredients and make this food while we still have to find dresses for the cocktail party and get ready to go to the party? Elsa looked over with me with a measure of sympathy. I hate to tell you this, but I don't think you're going to eat tomorrow. The confidence level in the room was overwhelming. But despite this bleak premonition, I remained optimistic. If this grand dinner did not occur Friday night, I was confident that it would be possible another night. The waiting only helped build the already high level of anticipation I was harboring. Around 4 o'clock, we decided to call it a night. We rearranged the living room a bit to accommodate the inflatable bed I'd been sleeping on. But then, disaster struck. Linz's coffee table basically disassembled itself as it was being moved aside. I guess our two hardcore Scrabble games were too much for it. Undaunted, Linz put the pieces and frame aside. The reassembly would be dealt with later. After dropping Elsa off at her house and returning to the apartment, it was now 5 in the morning. Linz helped me bring my luggage in and inflated the bed while I got changed. I thank Linz for letting me come up and stay. If the weekend end was sure that if tonight had been any indication, the rest of the weekend was sure to be a blast. She retired to the bedroom, and I was asleep mere seconds after my head made contact with the pillow. This concludes part 2 of The Chronicles of Endicott, an original audio production. Thank you for listening.